Good day, wherever you may be. Welcome to Shattering Myths. This program is devoted to the most important and clearly the fastest growing segment of society, even to, in most cases, the largest segment of society. To those of you who have finally come to realize, as I have, that the world's political, religious, military, and economic institutions are corrupt, that they are counterproductive, and that they can't be fixed. Our phone number, if you would like to address any of these concerns, if you would like to participate in this discussion, it's toll-free. It's 877-300-7645. In Afghanistan yesterday, a car packed with explosives was detonated as it sped through a crowded market. It did so in Afghanistan's eastern province, killing over 90 people. It's one of the most violent attacks in the country this year. You know, there's a bottom line here, and that is that Muslims have a tendency to be terrorists. They have a proclivity towards terror. They kill their own. They kill innocents. They lash out and kill without any reason or logic. They kill their own after blaming others of killing them. They think that the appropriate response to the illusion that they're being hunted down and killed by Christians and Jews is to go out and kill Muslims. And they do so. By the tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, and often by the millions. I don't know how many stories about Islamic terrorism, suicide bombings, we have to share that have to be published before the world finally gives up on this notion of radical Islam, of extremists, of insurgents, of being corrupted, of being radicalized. The truth is really simple. Islam has a singular voice. It's Muhammad. Muhammad is the basis of Allah in the Quran. Allah is modeled after Muhammad. It's painfully obvious if you read the Quran in context and you read it in chronological order, which you can do with Prophet of Doom, the most comprehensive book ever presented on the five earliest and most authentic Islamic religious sources. Muhammad was a terrorist. He led 75 terrorist raids in the first 10 years of the Islamic era. The Quran tells Muslims to follow Muhammad's example. Muhammad and Allah both say, although they are really one, say that the only guaranteed way to enter the Islamic paradise is to die as a martyr, killing for Allah in his cause. How many stories affirming this reality do we need to share before the world finally recognizes that the problem is Islam? You can't fix the Arab-Israeli conflict because the problem is Islam. The Muslims will never stop hating and killing Jews. So long as they're able to harm them, they will do so. You are never going to get them, no matter what you give them, to say, okay, that's enough killing already. Ever. There are no peaceful solutions there. When you recognize that Islam, fundamentalist Islam, right out of the book Islam, Quranic Islam, the example of Muhammad himself is prevalent. When the three parties, actually four, are engaged directly in Syria, and many others are engaged indirectly, with the direct parties being al-Nusra, which was the largest Islamic terrorist jihadist group wielding weapons against the Assad government. ISIS, which is now the Islamic State, simply is, which is currently the largest Sunni terrorist organization in the world. In fact, probably the largest Islamic terrorist organization in world history. They're fighting the Assad, but they're also fighting the Sunni Muslims of the Nusra Front. And then you have the defense of the existing establishment in Syria, both by the Syrian army and also by Hezbollah, the militia of Iran. And the parties that are aiding and abetting one side or the other, the United States, Europe, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Iran, Russia, creating a bloodbath. Now, that solution, that problem cannot be resolved ever. This is Sunnis killing Shia. They've been doing it for 1,400 years. It's inbred in their religion. There is no political fix to this. There's not even a religious fix to it. They will continue to bludgeon each other until one of the two variations of Islam is destroyed, or at least put into a box where they admit defeat and are completely subjected in submission. That's really the fate of what we're witnessing here. You can't find a political solution. There is no military solution. There is no religious solution. The only thing you can do is to disengage. The same thing is true in Iraq. The same thing is true in Egypt, in Libya. There is no way to resolve the nuclear ambitions of Iran. Iran recognizes it must have a bomb, not only to prevent countries like the United States from invading it, trying to occupy it, as the United States did recently, both Afghanistan and Iraq. The bomb is the ultimate prevention, if you will, prophylactic against invasion. But also because the Shia Muslims are outnumbered 4-1 by Sunnis, and they're outgunned 10-1 by Sunnis. And so the bomb is their only salvation. And so we are never going to negotiate a treaty that has them give up their dedication, devotion to completing their nuclear weapon. And so this is simply a religious issue, the bomb in Iraq and Iran. And so, folks, I can tell you how many times that Muslims act as suicide bombers, has Muslims go through markets filled with women and children, all Muslim women and children, by the way, and kill their own, doing so in service to their God. And yet, virtually every politician, virtually every military leader will say that it's insurgents and radicals and extremists, and Taliban and Al-Qaeda, and they'll name all sorts of things without ever saying Islam. Until we come to that point, there is no solution. There is actually a solution to all of this. I articulated it a couple of weeks ago, a 7-point plan that would eliminate Islamic terrorism almost instantaneously. But the first step in that plan requires people to start telling the truth. And no matter how many suicide bombings like this one in Afghanistan, where a beguiled Muslim, at the insistence of some imam, was told that he was pathetic and that the only way he would ever have sex is to die as a martyr, killing in Allah's cause so that he would go directly to Allah's brothel. That's what he was told. He wrapped his privates in gauze so that they would be intact when he arrived and he would be able to manipulate the virgins. Well, this huge explosion took place not far from a porous border with Pakistan's tribal region, where the military has been attacking hideouts of the Pakistani Taliban, which is really an odd situation there. It's as odd as most everything in the Islamic world now. Every country that is Islamic is on the brink of civil war, and that's basically what we're witnessing in Pakistan. The Taliban is an agency of the Pakistani government created for the express purpose of controlling Afghanistan on behalf of Pakistan. And to have the Pakistani army, which funds the Taliban, which controls the Taliban, which arms the Taliban, which directs the Taliban, fight the Taliban, is moronic. That's a war that can never be won. And yet, what's the response? The Taliban blow up American military cargoes, the fuel they torch and the weapons they confiscate, and they continue to be terrorists. And the fact is that the moment that America leaves Afghanistan, even if America were to stay in Afghanistan another 100 years, the Taliban will return to power. We empowered them during the 1980s under Zinoviev Brzezinski and Jimmy Carter. The attack comes, of course, at an uneasy time for Afghanistan, and of course Afghanistan's been in an uneasy time ever since America began arming the Taliban and Al-Qaeda to fight a proxy war against the Soviet-backed government back in the 1980s. But right now they're trying to recover from a disputed presidential election where the voter fraud was so extreme no one has a clue who won. The Taliban, however, distanced themselves from this attack because it killed over 90 civilians. The movement's leader has ordered militants to stop targeting civilians and to start targeting those that are influenced by something other than Islam. Here's Mujahid, who is the Taliban spokesperson, has been for a long time. It's Mujahid is just singular for Mujahideen, holy warrior in Allah's cause. Quote, the truth behind the attack will become clear after an investigation, but we clearly announce that this was not done by the Mujahideen or, the Mujahideen of the Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan. So from the Taliban's perspective, Afghanistan is a is an Islamic emirate. It's no different than is Saudi Arabia. It's no different than is Kuwait. It's no different than the emirates throughout the Gulf region. It's no different than what the Islamic State has declared in a borderless region between Syria and Iraq. But he said, no, we didn't do this. The Mujahideen do not conduct such attacks, and such attacks do not bring any benefit to them. No, this was just another Muslim sect acting badly. We'll be back. As most everyone knows, Egypt proposed a ceasefire to end the week-long cross-border fire between the Gaza Strip and Israel. This is such a different world than it was back in 2012, the last time Egypt tried to play the role of mediator. The last time they tried to play this role, they had the first actual elected leader in Egypt's history. Two-thirds of Egypt's population, a little higher percentage than that when you recognize that the Copts all voted for none of the above. That in the election, the fundamentalist Muslim, a leader in Muslim Brotherhood, won overwhelmingly. The only group to even create somewhat of a rival position and garner half as many votes was a more fundamentalist group called Salaf, which is the ancestors in Islam, which means they're Sunni based, they're Sunnah based, they are Hadith based, the oral reports from Muhammad and his companions. And as a leader in the Muslim Brotherhood, with the Muslim Brotherhood in control of every aspect of Egypt, and recognizing that Hamas, like Fatah, like the PLO, is a derivative of the Muslim Brotherhood, was literally created out of the Muslim Brotherhood. They had considerable influence over them. And so when they said, you know, I know that you guys all think that you're doing this great thing by fighting Jews and killing Jews, but The reality is you're getting your clock cleaned, and it's embarrassing. So we're going to call for a truce, and you're going to play along. And Hamas listened to the Egyptian government, the Muslim Brotherhood. And while they agreed to a truce, they didn't honor it. It was shortly thereafter they were firing rockets back in Israel, which is really about the only thing that they were compelled to do was to stop firing rockets in Israel, and they commenced doing so shortly thereafter. Now, we move forward 2 years. Look at what has happened in Egypt. You know, Egypt's gone from a military dictatorship that was considered to be an alliance with the United States, where the United States was paying for 100% of the cost of the Egyptian military, so that Egypt was essentially a dependency of the U.S. government and its dictator, a puppet of the U.S. government, to having a popular election in Egypt and having Egyptian citizens voting overwhelmingly, almost 70% in favor of the most fundamentalist Islamic candidate, to the military chieftain that this candidate promoted. A military chieftain that was educated in the United States, who is a fundamentalist Muslim, leading a coup to take over the control of that country and imprisoning and outlawing the Muslim Brotherhood, the party that won 2/3 to 3/4 of the vote the last time peoples were actually able to vote for whoever they wanted. And now, as a opponent of the Muslim Brotherhood, when Egypt speaks to Hamas, Hamas doesn't listen. Hamas thinks the Sisi government, the military junta that rules Egypt, is as big a foe, and they would just as soon shoot rockets at the Egyptian government as they would Israel. And so they claim, nah, we're not listening to you. What a difference 2 years can make. And so there was a momentary ceasefire. Egypt says, okay, yeah, we'll go along with it. Cessation of violence on both sides, that's all we're asking for anyway. And Hamas says, no, we won't. And continue to send rockets into Israel. And so Israel continued to respond. It is fairly amazing. And, of course, in this part of the world now, the United States has no credibility with any of those three players. The United States is known to be a country that would willingly, knowingly, purposefully, deliberately sacrifice Israel to the Muslims to get cheaper fuel prices and to persuade them not to continue to attack and terrorize American interests, the Muslims. And we have no credibility with Egypt because it was Hillary Clinton that worked with Morsi and the Muslim Brotherhood to broker the last peace. She was very close to the Muslim Brotherhood, supported the Muslim Brotherhood, and no one in the Obama administration is supportive of the military junta that has now taken control of Egypt. No influence there. And, of course, we have no influence with Hamas, so how is this issue to be resolved? Hamas, when they were presented with the Egyptian ceasefire deal, said that the full deal would have to come first before the ceasefire. And I don't know how that works. You know, you have the Muslims saying that unless the Jews capitulate on every point, they don't want to negotiate for peace. And then they, when you've you put preconditions on a meeting, they say, nope, you need to go in without preconditions. And here they, rather than negotiate, they say, nope, the full deal has to come first, and yet the purpose of the ceasefire was to negotiate a settlement. So the Hamas spokesperson said, a ceasefire without reaching agreement is rejected. The Palestinian officials, and by the way, there is no such thing as a Palestinian. There has not been a Palestinian for well over 2,000 years, actually over 2,500 years. I would say that amongst the myths being promoted today, second only to Islam is a religion of peace and the terrorists have corrupted their religion. Second only to that lie, the myth that there is such thing as a as a Palestinian state and a Palestinian people, has got to be amongst the most deadly, the most dangerous myths being perpetrated today. And it is a lie that is repeated so often that the vast majority of people think it's true. And if you try to correct them, they say, oh, well, you know, it's you're just an idiot. You're a Zionist. I do happen to be a Zionist. Yeah, I was a Zionist. Zionist means signpost on the way. I hope that this program serves as a sign to those who want to know the truth. And the truth is, the last of the Philistines were murdered by the Assyrians over 2,500 years ago. They never had a country called Philistia, and they most certainly... not one of them has survived. So there is no such thing as a Palestinian people or a place called Palestine. But by promoting that myth, then there's this identity to this land which they are complete strangers in. And they're Arab Muslims. Their religion, their culture came out of Mecca and Medina. By being Arabs, they trace their ancestry back to Saudi Arabia, to those who prevailed in the religious fight during Muhammad's time. They have no ties to the land, never had any ties to the land. They've conquered it and taken it away from others on occasion, but the land is clearly the Jews. And that's true if you study history. That's true if you study archaeology. It's true if you study the oldest and most accurate historical text in the world, which would be the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. No matter where you look, the truth is obvious. The place is Israel. And it has been Israel for many, many thousands of years. Even during the Roman occupation, it was the province of Yehuda. And, you know, there was a period of time where the Assyrians were successful in destroying much of the of what was called Ephraim or Israel, the northern kingdom. And so for a period of time, it was only Yehuda that survived, the kingdom of Yehuda. And during the Roman occupation, the province, all of what was once Israel and more beyond that territory, was called the province of Yehuda, what it was named. And it was only after Hadrian, in an anti-Semitic act, tried to rename Jerusalem after himself, and then build mighty temples to himself there, promoting himself as God, that the Jews finally rebelled one last time, and the Romans, after a long fight, annihilated many of them, you know, crucified them, took them off as slaves, salted the land, destroyed the place. And what Hadrian did, he was extraordinarily anti-Semitic. He not only burned every copy he could find of the Torah, he not only burned alive, flailed alive every Hebrew scholar. He made everything that Yahweh encouraged us to participate in illegal. If you were caught observing the Shabbat, you were killed. If you were caught attending one of Yahweh's seven invitations to meet, you were killed. If you were caught with a copy of the Torah, you were killed. That was the nature of Hadrian and the Roman Empire. And so, you know, out of that great animosity, Hadrian decided, you know, I'm going to rename the place. It's no longer the province of Yehuda. He was torturing the Jews and said, you know, throughout history, who was Yehuda's greatest adversary? And it was the Philistines. And so Hadrian said, okay, well, then I'm just going to apply this new name to the place. I'm going to call it the province of Philistia. And that's this lie, this changing the name out of anti-Semitic rage, is the basis of the current Palestinian myth. And it is a lie that has gargantuan consequences. It's a lie that ultimately is going to lead directly to World War III and billions of deaths. So if you want to make light of it, I want you to know that you then bear the stain of the consequence. The mythical people who call themselves Palestinians, and until they can identify themselves accurately, they have no credibility. And if you have to lie about who you are to gain something that you crave based on entirely false pretenses, you have no legitimacy whatsoever. You have no credibility. You ought not be listened to. They say that 175 people have been killed by the Israeli airstrikes, and the UN, which is always on the side of Muslims over Jews, estimates that 77% of those have been civilians. No, it's not 77% that are civilians. 100% are civilians. You know, Gaza is not a independent state. Gaza does not have a military. Gaza does not have a police force, as we would consider it. Everyone in Gaza, every Arab Muslim in Gaza is a civilian. So it's not that 77% of those are civilians. 100% of them are civilians. That's the same thing in Afghanistan and Iraq. When Americans engaged in war there, everyone we killed was a civilian. They didn't. I think in Iraq, in Iraq too, we might have killed, and I tried to do a lot of research on this. I think we might have killed 5 members of the Iraqi army in our second invasion. It's all civilians. They're all Muslim, but they're all civilians. Now, it is an interesting line, and it's repeated more and more these days. The Israelis use their military to defend civilian lives, to protect civilian lives. The entire reason that Israel is engaging in military strikes against Hamas leadership, Hamas facilities, and rocket sites and bomb-making facilities and supply chains in Gaza is to protect Israeli civilians. If Hamas stopped shooting rockets, stopped producing bombs, stopped bringing in military supplies into Gaza, if Hamas stopped threatening Israel with total annihilation, Israel would leave them alone. So Israel uses its military for a singular purpose, and that is to protect the lives of its civilians. Muslims, like Hamas, take the opposite approach. They use the lives of civilians to protect their military. And if you look at any of the pictures and any of the videos that have been taken in Gaza over the last 2 weeks, what you see is the rocket, the contrails and the plumes of combustion that are coming out of these rockets as they're fired. And you take it back to where they were shot. It's always in highly populated areas. Hamas, Muslims, constantly use the civilian population, particularly women and children, to shield and protect their military assets. It's exactly the opposite of the Israelis. And the reason for that is that the religion of Islam is the antithesis of Judeo-Christianity. Life is precious in Judeo-Christianity. Life is not precious in Islam. That's why Muslims constantly say, you know, we'll ultimately prevail because we love death more than you love life. But So long as that distinction exists and the world is unwilling to begin there with the difference that Islam makes on a culture where in Islam, civilians are sacrificed to protect military assets, where in the world apart from Islam, military assets are to protect civilian lives. Until that distinction is reasoned in people's heads, there is no solution here. And when that realization is made, the only solution is for the world to disarm Muslims. And yet, the world is doing just the opposite. The vast majority of military hardware being sold around the world today is being sold to Muslims. The United States is the largest provider. Israel says that 1,000 rockets have been fired from Gaza during this present conflict. 1,000 rockets. Now, you know how many Israelis the Muslims have killed with their pathetic attempts to be terrorists? You know how many they've killed with 1,000 rockets? And their entire attempt is to kill as many Jews as possible. They've killed one. Now, Israel has killed less than 200, and their attempt is to protect life. The quote from the Israeli Defense Forces was that after 6 hours of unilateral attacks by Hamas, the IDF has now resumed operational activity in the Gaza Strip. During the ceasefire that was observed by Israel, some 50 rockets were fired by Hamas into Israel. Israel has pledged to intensify its military operations in the Gaza Strip. And there are those that say, well, then the solution and the responsibility to preclude them doing so is the Obama administration's. But since when is a nation precluded from defending itself? We have Glenn on the line. Glenn, if you were president of the United States and the Canadians decided that they would call for your destruction and the Mexicans were to decide that they would send their military to attack the United States and start firing rockets, would you say, you know, I think the proper thing to do is, even though they fired 1,000 rockets at us, is to show restraint because, well, we wouldn't want to harm any Mexican civilians. So I think we'll just stand here, and maybe we can even put signs on the elderly and say, you know, hit me instead of the young. What do you think? Would you do that?
Yeah, probably not. But the Mexicans are already at war with us, shipping disease-ridden people in or over our borders by the thousands anyway.
But there you go. it's pretty amazing. Why is the world pretending that Israel is an aggressor here and that Israel needs to be constrained when all Israel is trying to do is to keep an enemy that has avowed to destroy it, that is shooting rockets into its metropolitan areas, from doing so?
There's a technology difference, and that's sort of what I called about. These pathetic bottle rockets that they fire, when you look at it from the standpoint of war of attrition, if I can hide behind a rock and persuade you to fire off a bullet every time I fire a rubber dart at you, pretty soon you're going to run out of bullets. Or, you know, these missile systems such as Iron Dome, Patriot, and THAAD and stuff, exceedingly expensive to operate.
Oh, yeah. It's kind of like the United States trying to fight in the Middle East when we would send a barrage of $52 million cruise missiles against a site that was comprised of tanks and a few camels and some AK-47s, that even if you had a direct hit on 100% of your missiles, every time you engage in that kind of a conflict, you lose.
Right, right. There was a bit of a scandal in Israel when it was revealed that Iron Dome was originally slated slated to deploy primarily in the defense of military installations as opposed to the civilian population at large. And right now it's obviously being employed to, protect civilian populations. But, as you said, I wasn't even aware that even one Israeli had been killed by one of these.
Yeah, one was killed a couple of days ago by one of the rockets. You know, the issue, they are clearly aren't model rockets, but they are, the average rocket size, as I understand it, is about 8 feet, in length and about, a foot or so in diameter. They have enough of a payload that they will create, you know, if they hit the ground, they're going to create a crater in the ground that's probably 4 feet, 5 feet deep and 15 to 20 feet in diameter. If they hit a building, they're going to take out most of the building. Issue is not the size of the rockets. It's the guidance systems of the rockets and that the Muslims in Gaza are incapable of building the rockets or the guidance systems, most of the rockets and guidance systems are built in Iran and are shipped into Hamas. And the Iranians, which are probably the smartest Muslims in the world, they're incapable of manufacturing a guidance system that works. So it's the lack of a guidance system. In fact, even in the Iron Dome that Israel is deploying, it's only about 1 in 10 of these rockets that Israel even attempts to shoot down, because Israel tracks every rocket, and the rockets are almost as likely to go up and land on the Gaza population, killing Gaza civilians, as they are to land in Israel. So they don't shoot those down. We'll be back with Glenn in a moment.